Authorities are looking for a man who reportedly assaulted a female student last night near the University of Montana. Good evening, I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us about a university policy that lawmakers want changed. And in our feature interview, reporter Edward O'Brien talks with UM's new campus student assault prevention coordinator. The University of Montana sent out an email alert after a female student reported being attacked outside a sorority house last night. Missoula police say the 18-year-old woman said she was grabbed and knocked to the ground as she walked from the university to the Kappa Kappa Gamma sorority house at about 7 p.m. last night. The woman said her attacker released her after he heard people walking toward them. The woman said her attacker was a white man in his early 20s, about 5 feet 6 inches tall and skinny with shoulder-length blonde hair, no facial hair, and wire-rimmed glasses that may have been broken during the struggle. The woman suffered minor injuries but declined medical attention. Police sent out extra foot patrols in the area but were not able to locate the man.
And in other news from around the state, the Missoula County Sheriff's Office has contacted the hunter who accidentally shot a dog in the Lee Creek area near Lolo Pass last Sunday and have determined there was no crime committed. The hunter thought he was shooting a wolf, but instead killed one of three Malamutes owned by Lane Spence, who had taken his dogs along for a cross-country ski outing. Missoula County Sheriff's spokeswoman Paige Pavilone says after interviewing the hunter and the dog's owner, they've determined no violation was committed.
Everybody has reviewed the information here at the Sheriff's Office. It's been evaluated by the Missoula County Attorney's Office, and it's also been evaluated by Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. So we've scrambled to see if it lined up with anything criminal, and it just simply does not.
Pavilone says the Sheriff's Office has been inundated with calls from around the country from people upset about the incident. That's one reason they are keeping the hunter's identity confidential.
Because of the backlash that was created on social media, there was people calling for vigilante justice, and if that was me, then people, you know, wanting blood. So it got pretty scary, and we can understand why someone would be reluctant to come forward and express that information or give details to their side of the story when there's threats being made. And we have an obligation to make sure that safety is upheld for that person and his family.
Pavilone says the hunter is very upset about accidentally killing the dog. She says she hopes people learn from the incident so it doesn't happen again.
Federal mine safety officials have approved a route for a new tunnel at a copper and silver mine in Troy. The Mine Safety and Health Administration approved the new route last month, and work began this month at the Troy Mine, owned by Rivette Minerals Incorporated. The Flathead Beacon reports Rivette Minerals expects to spend $12 million to dig the new tunnel. Work could take up to a year. Work at the mine came to a halt late last year after a series of rockfalls and cave-ins. The mine laid off 100 workers in May, leaving about 65 employees. Rivette President and CEO John Shanahan says the company has no plans to give up on the Troy mine.
Democratic U.S. Senate candidate John Bollinger is calling on Governor Steve Bullock to convene a special legislative session to expand Medicaid to another 70,000 residents. The former Republican lieutenant governor said today in a news conference that uninsured Montanans also should have the option to access state health clinics for public employees. Earlier this year, the legislature rejected a similar proposal to expand the Medicaid rolls. Senate President Jeff Essman says the same result is likely if the legislature meets again. Essman says the nation's new health care law and a Medicaid expansion would mean higher insurance premiums and higher taxes. Bullock has previously said he doesn't plan to call a special session, quote, anytime soon, end quote, to expand Medicaid because Republican leaders such as Essman still oppose it.
Montana's Commissioner of Higher Education is defending a tuition practice which a group of state lawmakers is calling illegal. The Legislative Audit Committee says both the University of Montana and Montana State University are offering greater tuition discounts for non-resident students than is allowed by state statute. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce has the story.
The state checks to make sure the Montana University system is in compliance with the law every other year. And more than once, those audits have found UM or MSU giving tuition reductions to out-of-state students, which are higher than what's allowed in state code. statute says the university cannot give waivers of more than 2% of an out-of-state student's tuition costs. Non-resident students are really important for the bottom line. They pay much more than their share of the total tuition collected by the schools. But legislative financial auditor Vanessa Shaw says UM did give bigger tuition reductions in fiscal year 2012.
By approximately $1.7 million,
that is. And the university is on track to do it again in 2013.
By $1.1 million.
MSU has been doing similar stuff two audits in a row.
We're not, as a group, sitting here trying to blatantly defy Montana law.
Commissioner of Higher Education Clayton Christian.
We're trying to act within the spirit of that. And
Christian says the Board of Regents has the authority to set non-resident tuition wherever they want.
I mean, we could set tuition for non-resident students at a lower number. We just have had a lot of success in using that discounting method.
Setting tuition higher and then recruiting students by offering them a bigger discount. The Board of Regents changed its rules on the matter in 2012. Hungry Horse Republican Senator Dee Brown says that puts the board at a crossroads with the legislature.
It is in defiance of state law, so these will always be in the audit report until you come into compliance.
Commissioner Christian believes the universities are still acting within the intention of the statute, saying out-of-state students are still paying higher tuition than the cost of education and are therefore not putting taxpayers on the hook for any more money. But he says perhaps the board needs to work with the legislature to align Regents' policy with the state's law. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
Federal agents have announced that 559 pounds of explosives taken from a U.S. Forest Service storage facility near Red Lodge this spring have been recovered. Alcohol, tobacco, firearms, and explosives agent Kay Bray of Billings told the Carbon County News yesterday that all of the missing explosives have been recovered. The ATF declined to say where or when the explosives were found, but Bray did say today that no arrests have been made. The ATF had offered a $5,000 reward leading to the arrest of whoever was responsible to breaking into a Forest Service storage bunker in April and taking the emulsion-type explosives, detonating cord, and explosive cast boosters. Bray says the investigation continues.
Attorneys for a Montana man severely burned in a Bakken oil patch fire say they have reached a multi-million dollar settlement with an oil and gas company. The attorneys for Lester Gary Roberts described the settlement today as a substantial eight-figure sum, but did not release a precise figure. That would make it worth at least $10 million. Roberts says he was severely burned by a November 2010 fire while working for a contractor on a drilling project in Stanley, North Dakota. Court records show the 30-year-old Billings man sued Texas-based EOG Resources Incorporated last year. The lawsuit included claims that Roberts was not sufficiently trained and did not have required flame-retardant clothing. The two sides reached a settlement this month. EOG's contractor, GNC Industries, was earlier dismissed from the case.
A former officer with the Montana's Veterans of Foreign Wars has been sentenced to 2 years in prison and ordered to pay more than $140,000 in restitution for using various VFW accounts to pay his mortgage and other expenses. The Independent Record reports 68-year-old Larry Howard Longfellow was sentenced today by U.S. District Judge Charles Lovell in Helena. Longfellow worked for VFW for 23 years and was the adjutant quartermaster from 2004 through 2011, a position federal prosecutors say is similar to chief financial officer. After Longfellow retired in 2011, the man who succeeded him discovered the unauthorized expenses. Longfellow pleaded guilty to credit fraud in August. Montana VFW Commander Ed Croucher testified that Longfellow's actions hurt the ability of VFW to provide assistance and services to veterans.
The University of Montana announced this week it has filled the newly created position of Campus Student Assault Prevention Coordinator. Dr. Kimberly Brown Campbell starts her new part-time job December 2nd. For the past year and a half, Brown Campbell has been part of UM's efforts to address sexual violence on campus, working within the Department of Counselor Education. Prior to this new job, she helped develop and co-lead Missoula's Justice System Team Response to Intimate Partner Violence. That's a local, coordinated community and criminal justice system response to relationship violence. In this evening's feature interview with Edward O'Brien, Brown Campbell says she's examined how crime victims are not always adequately served within the justice system.
once you've been through that whole process, and oftentimes you may not get the outcome that you feel the person who did this crime to you deserved. And so how do you as a person then move on from that if that's the case?
What sort of cases do you typically work in?
There is a great deal of sexual assault and rape cases, but we work a lot through crime victim advocacy with domestic violence, relationship violence, it's called usually now, and stalking. Even dating violence, so the gamut with anything crime against person, but we specialize here through the Crime Victim Advocates Program in that relationship violence.
I'm also interested in people who work in the social victim advocacy work. It sounds so dark, so stressful. Is it?
Yes. Just to be blunt, it is. However, there are times when sometimes you feel like you're that objective, non-judgmental voice that can be there for that, or a mirror, if you will, for people that oftentimes with family, they're so busy trying to help and make you feel better, but to have somebody who sort of gets it from a non-family, from a more objective perspective, can be super helpful for someone who's gone through a violent crime like that, especially if it's somebody that they knew that committed the crime against them.
Well, you are the University of Montana's new Student Assault Prevention Coordinator.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Overall, that would be coordinating all campus efforts and mostly focusing on students. However, faculty and administration would also be involved in the prevention efforts. For the most part, what we're doing is mitigating and working with the Department of Justice agreement. We also have what's called the cooperative agreement that we entered into with the Department of Justice, the Office of Violence Against Women, that division of DOJ, in May of 2012. That was before the agreements of May of 2013 came along. So we sort of preempted that by applying for, it's essentially a grant, but it's called the cooperative agreement because we work closely with the DOJ on the initiatives that we use to ensure that they're best practices and that they're initiatives that have been researched that work well on college campuses. So I would really like to hear from students as to what they think would be effective.
And much has been reported on this. What do you think, though, are some of the key elements of these agreements?
One of the big ones is bystander intervention or involvement. Oftentimes we look at violent crimes against other people as a personal issue or as something that an outsider or bystander needs to stay out of. And what we're trying to teach is that within safety confines and reason, that there actually is a way that you can step in and help folks who may be in a situation that's dangerous. Or if you see a perpetrator of one of these crimes that may be doing something unsafe, that you can at least alert someone that this is going on and maybe some intervention can occur before a crime actually gets perpetrated.
It seems like a pretty big societal change, especially in a state like Montana that is so other people's business is other
Absolutely.
People's business. How do you do it?
I think slowly. I think it's a culture change that you're looking for, and it's looking at changing social norms. And all of that goes back to research starting back in the 50s, but with really social psychology and how people in these situations, do you leave it alone? Do you stay out of it? And one option you have always is calling 911 or alerting public safety to come and check it out. That can be a simple way to intervene, but also a super effective way. So it's mainly just maintaining your own safety, but teaching people that you can do something.
Give me a vignette of somebody who is in the room where something odd is happening. What would that look like typically?
I think in situations, especially on college campuses, and I think most people can recall a situation where they've been, say, at a party where a friend of theirs is drinking and maybe that person crosses the line with the drink, you know, they realize, oh, this person is now intoxicated. You think, even from a driving perspective, you know, should this person be driving home? Should this person be staying in a situation by themselves where they may not be able to make the decisions they would make if they were sober? Mm. So you can help someone out in that way, maybe by going to parties in groups and looking out for one another. And I'm talking across gender lines, across age.
I was just going to say, you're referring to women specifically, but not necessarily.
Right. Yeah. I think it's important that violence against someone you know is not gender-based. I mean, it is gender-based. It's typically male on female. However, it happens across all sexuality confines. If there is a situation where alcohol and drugs are involved, that just adds another level of danger. And again, that's not to say that everyone should just stop going to parties and doing those things on a college campus, but that definitely adds a level of risk.
If you're a guy, I think that's a tough thing. Everybody's had a couple of drinks, and there's one guy who's kind of focused in on another young woman, and mm-hmm. he's trying to, I'm going to be blunt, try to yeah. get some action, right?
Right, absolutely.
And if one of your buddies comes in, you're going to say, hey, back off, I'm trying to work here. You know, yeah. I'm being crude about it, but
no, it's realistic.
Yeah. What's the other guy who's maybe trying to intervene supposed to do?
I think in a situation like that, and that's exactly what we're getting at with the changes in social norms, is to, you know, talk to your buddy and say, is there a way we could be here together as a group and you can get to know her a little better? And again, I know that that's not maybe at that time that person's yeah. intention, but as the buddy, I think if you see that this could turn into something that and looking at it as a way too to protect both people's safety, you know, that this is a situation that could go awry because both people have poor judgment at that point. So looking at it as protecting really everybody involved.
The Missoula County Attorney has made it pretty clear that he feels the DOJ is overstepping itself in trying to investigate sexual assault cases his office has worked with. What do you make of that? And could it complicate your job?
Folks who are running for that position have talked about possibly or wanting to cooperate with the DOJ. So we may have that in our future. I think Mr. Van Valkenburg has thought very carefully about his choices, and I think there's a lot of validity to reasons why he's done what he's done. On the other hand, I think we do have the Missoula Police Department and the university who have chosen to go into these agreements with the DOJ. I think what's the hardest thing about all of this is that the University of Montana and Missoula are the first community who have had this happen to them that I know of in this capacity. And so we're really feeling this out with our feelers and not knowing how this will all turn out in the future, but doing the best we can. And I feel like the cooperations that have happened with Missoula entities and the DOJ so far have been nothing but positive. I haven't heard anybody feel like our freedoms are being compromised or our ability to still carry on the way we've carried on forever has been changed at all, and other than for the positive. So from this prevention standpoint and making changes that just make reporting dangerous situations easier and more accessible.
How will your effectiveness be measured?
Part of it will come from we submit large reports semi-annually to the Department of Justice, and we get approval for those. They check on those. That data, just so everyone knows, is aggregate data that goes to Congress and is, again, put together and as a nationwide initiative to see what is effective and what isn't. So for me personally, I want to hear feedback. You know, I want people to come to me and say, this is an area where I feel like we're lacking. Can you work towards putting more effort into this area? Mm-hmm. Also, again, I just think only time will tell, and these kinds of sea changes go so slowly. This grant ends in 2015, and then we can apply for it again until 2018. So I'm thinking we just look at the bigger picture and say, where were we back in 2010, and where will we be in 2015, and how can we move forward? So again, I'm looking to the campus, students and faculty and staff to say, I feel like these things are effective and these things need more work.
Can I ask a rude question?
Sure.
Can I ask how old you are?
I am 43.
And I ask because in a Montana Kaiman article, I believe it was written by Alexander Deedy earlier this summer, one student suggested there'd be too much of an age gap between you and the students, and that may make you a bit less approachable. What do you have to say about that?
I think it's a tough one because, I mean, there's definitely some merit to that. However, the reason I say tough is because you've got to have someone who has some life experience, definitely, but also experience in the field of violence prevention and looking at the research and what's been done and what works and doesn't work. And I feel like I'm somebody who has a very youthful attitude. And in my art therapy practice, I get on the floor and play with children. So, you know, you can't turn back the years. But at the same time, I do feel like I come with a good mix of that youthful abandon, but with some experience. Sort of also, it's being able to do a job like this. I think it comes with a fair amount of criticism. And you cannot please everyone. Just knowing that that's the way it is and being able to live with that is part of the job.
Last night, an 18-year-old woman reported she was attacked near a Missoula sorority house. What goes through your mind when you hear that another young woman was jumped in the dark and pinned down until some people were apparently coming down the sidewalk and then she reported the guy took off? What goes through your mind? Must be so frustrating.
It is that feeling of, thank goodness those people came along, because she may, you know, not have been in a position to get out of that. I think what we all need to remember, as unfortunate and sad as it is that this happens everywhere in our country and in our world. And that sometimes it's easy for us to go to that this is happening all the time on the UM campus, but it does happen everywhere. We live in a small city comparatively, and oftentimes college campuses, the statistics all say that people who are most likely to experience sexual assault are between the ages of 18 and 24. And so that kind of puts us right in that category with a lot of our population being in that age group. So I just believe that just shows that whomever reported that incident, whether it was her or the people, that thank goodness someone reported, so that now we do have actually quite an accurate description, more so than usual, of this person. So that if there's anything fishy that happens or somebody sees this person, I would just encourage, no matter how iffy you think your hunch is, if you have an inkling of who this may be, just report. And that's really what that's all about, is the most important thing is just keeping other people safe.
And your advice for guys who've maybe had a few beers, feeling their oats, want to hook up?
Yeah.
What do you say to them?
You know, we are sexual beings, and we are also intimate beings, and we need that intimacy. And for guys and girls who want to hook up, I think, again, you know, maybe the best thing to do is to check in with a friend and say, am I okay here? Is everything okay? And or to let that friend know, I am okay. I'm consenting to this. Think about your actions. And is this something that you may look towards in the morning and feel like, oh, I wish I would or would not have done this? So, and that's hard to do, I know, in that moment. But you can't turn the clock back. You can't erase things.
Sounds like drunk driving, doesn't it?
It actually is a lot of the same messages.
Dr. Kimberly Brown Campbell, the University of Montana's new Student Assault Prevention Coordinator. Really good to meet you. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you for having me.
And now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide tonight, expect mostly clear skies and lows 6 to 13 degrees. Tomorrow should be mostly sunny with highs in the upper 20s to mid-30s. For central Montana, it should be rather chilly tonight with mostly clear skies and lows 10 below to 0 degrees. Tomorrow, expect sunny weather and highs 25 to 30 degrees. Southwest Montana tonight, expect mostly cloudy skies and a chance of snow in the evening. Lows are 0 to 5 above. Tomorrow should be partly cloudy with highs 20 to 25 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Mary Sheehy Moe.
This weekend will mark my 45th observance of the Bobcat Grizzly game, the Brawl of the Wild, as it is now hyped. I'm not too keen on the brawlish aspects of the event, especially what goes on in the stands and in town after the game. Nor do I like the barbs that fly back and forth for weeks beforehand in the name of rivalry humor. Some remarks delivered in jest are received as jabs, and why cultivate animosity with a neighbor? I'm not even particularly a football fan, yet I'm irresistibly drawn to the Cat-Grizz game. My first game is touted as the most exciting one in the history of the rivalry. It was in 1968 at the old Dornblazer Field. Some guys on the field that day would end up being my friends. One guy in the stands would end up being my husband. Others I would never know, but would always remember. Top of that list would be the hero of the game, a Bobcat from Great Falls named Paul Schaefer. He was an amazing athlete, and it didn't hurt my interest any that he was movie star handsome. Ahead 24-9 in the fourth quarter, the Grizz seemed to have the game sewn up, but the Cats scored 3 touchdowns in the last 9 minutes. Paul Schaefer scored the first one with 8:15 on the clock and dove into the end zone to clinch the game with 12 seconds to spare. 24 years later, Paul Schaefer was killed in a skiing accident on Big Mountain. He was only 44 years old, young to me now, but impossibly old-seeming in 1968. When I heard the news, the memory of that game came back as fresh as yesterday. He was a Bobcat who stole victory from my Grizz, but he sure was something to see. One of my favorite Cat-Grizz memories was a game I didn't even stay for. It was in 2002, also in Missoula. Friday had been one of those perfect golden autumn days, but Saturday morning the temperature dropped 30 degrees in 3 hours. By the time I arrived at the president's pregame brunch, snow was falling. In the University Center ballroom, some 200 Montanans had gathered. Once students at either MSU or the U of M, they now had careers as teachers, lawyers, engineers, bankers, and the like. But over time, we had all become neighbors in that small town with long streets we call Montana. Then President Dennison liked to showcase his university's talent at the brunch, and that year it was a music student from Conrad. She had long dark hair, a pure pretty face, and a voice like one of those deep plush chairs in the lobby of the Algonquin, the kind of voice you just sink into and can't leave. She sang Summertime, her voice ballroom dancing across the glossy notes, calling up a languid southern summer she had probably never experienced. Behind her, a blizzard of the type she knew all too well swirled soundlessly against the wall-to-ceiling windows. The elegance and incongruity of that moment stayed with me throughout the first half of the game. But the Cats were stifling my athlete du jour, John Edwards, and their freshman quarterback, Travis Lule, was having himself a day. On the wet bleachers in the ever-worsening blizzard, with my nose running like a fire hydrant, all I could think of was summertime. At halftime, I went to Rockin' Rudy's, bought the Sarah Vaughan version, and drove home, toasty warm and driving slow, listening to the game and thinking of that Conrad girl. It wasn't summertime, but the living was easy. My least favorite Cat-Grizz memory was in 2010. Chase Reynolds had been my favorite player for years. He had caught my eye in his high school days and captivated me at the U of M for 3 years, waltzing his way to the end zone again and again. It was his senior year in 2010, and he had struggled with injuries all season, but in the second half they put him in and he started dancing again. With plenty of time left in the game, he needed only 3 yards to set a new Grizzly rushing record. The press corps was jumping up and down on the sidelines, yelling, "Give him the ball," but he didn't get it. The Grizz lost in a heartbreaker, and no one was more brokenhearted than Chase Reynolds. Sometime during the last decade, I lost interest in attending the game in person. I don't like sitting in the stands with people who cheer when an opponent is injured. I don't like having to look at fanware depicting Grizzlies doing obscene things to Bobcats, or vice versa. I don't like all the frenzy and fury. And of course, I don't like being cold. But I do like watching young people shine. I do like connecting again with all these Montanans who have been and will be part of the story of my life and the history of the state. And someday when I'm in the E-wing of the Salt Lake City airport, killing time till 6 flights to Montana cities all leave within 15 minutes of each other, I'll strike a common chord with someone there in the shared memory of that gorgeous guy diving into the end zone, that pretty girl singing Summertime in a blizzard, that kid from Drummond stranded 3 yards short of history, or maybe something that happens this Saturday. So I'll be watching. I hope you are too. This is Mary Sheehy Moe, retired from education, but still interested in Montana's kids and the schools that help them shine.
Mary Sheehy Moe is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.